Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, the second half of the show boasts Fitzdog, always funny, Greg Fitzsimmons. He'll be sitting in on the news. We'll take a deep dive. Women's World Cup, climbing Mount Everest, many topics. First, 8sleep.com. Chronic sleep deprivation leads to depression, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. We need our 8 hours, people. Sleep, it's a big problem. Temperature, well, that's a bigger problem. When you're trying to sleep and it's hot, oh, I've dealt with this my whole life. Now there's 8sleep. Love these guys. The pod by 8sleep is a high-tech bed design to achieve the optimal sleep developed by sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep. Combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. It learns your habits and adjust the temperature automatically. So not too hot, not too cold, just right to keep you right in that REM. You can try the pod for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll refund your purchase and arrange a free pickup. So it's over 3 months. Man, be coming into, Thanksgiving, and you'll still be trying this bad boy out. For a limited time, you get $150 off your purchase at 8sleep.com/Adam. That's EIGHT sleep.com/Adam.
Thursday night, legendary FBI undercover agent Mike McGowan joins us at the 10E Booze and Book Club. Enjoy exquisite Lebanese cuisine, grab a Mangria signature cocktail, and kick back while I read from Mike's memoir, Ghost, My 30 Years as an FBI Undercover Agent. Incredibly, my own employer, the agency I had worked like a dog and risked my life for, was now accusing me of stealing almost $200 million in heroin and cocaine and reselling it on the street like a common dope dealer. Not only was my perfect life over and the reputation I had worked so hard to establish in the toilet, if I couldn't find a way to prove my innocence, there was a strong possibility I'd end up in federal prison hanging with some of the asshole drug dealers I'd put away. I was in for the fight of my life. This Thursday night at 10E in downtown Los Angeles, the 10E Booze and Book Club. For more information, follow at Carolla Drinks and visit boozeandbookclub.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
We'll bring Fitzdog in as soon as he rolls up, and he'll sit in with the news. This half of the show brought to you by 8sleep.com/Adam. What do you got, Gina Grad?
Well, financier Jeffrey Epstein pleaded not guilty on Monday to sex trafficking charges. That's according to the Associated Press. If that name sounds familiar, he has been around the last couple of days. 66 years old, been ordered to be kept in jail until his bail hearing. He has a flight risk. He has a bunch of passports, two jets. Federal prosecutors unsealed new charges against Epstein, alleging he abused dozens of underage girls. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan said Epstein created, quote, a network, an operation enabling him to sexually exploit and abuse dozens of girls that he paid these victims, you know, a couple hundred dollars apiece. It first started, I guess, as naked massages allegedly, and then would always, you know, get into something else. Meanwhile, prosecutors say federal agents found some photos of young-looking girls in a locked safe while searching the seven-story townhouse after his arrest.
Seven-story townhouse?
That's the real story.
Wow.
Yeah. Buried the lead.
I don't know that you have like a mezzanine in your townhouse.
A dumbwaiter?
A loge.
Wow.
Yeah. The indictment also said Epstein was aware they were minors. Some told them their age. And he has some heavy-hitting friends like Trump and Clinton. And he's been around for a long time. Mm. He actually already got a sweetheart deal on this in Florida, what, like 10 years ago? And now, because there's a New York case, it's sort of being reopened.
Is he the guy who had the island? And then what happened with Copperfield in that island?
Oh, is that the same island?
I don't know.
I think there's an island involved. There's
multiple islands, but There's Epstein, I thought something with an island. Copperfield had some sort of island thing going
Misconduct
on.
Island?
Yes. I don't know how this stuff works.
You're not talking about Molestation Island, are you? That sounds familiar.
So I don't know. Anyway, here's the thing. You know what I would say? Like, I guess every guy. Hey, Fitzdog.
What's happening?
Can tell me if you're down with this thought.
Yeah.
Like, I would say to my son, you may feel like drinking and driving, but if you're going to drink, just stay home or have a designated driver. And you may feel like having sex with underage runaways when you're older, but just beat off in the shower. As a matter of fact, combine your dad's two loves. Have a drink and beat off in the shower, because guys' libido ruins them.
Like, yes.
Think about the prop. Think about all the situations. Every situation ever made the news. Every guy's ever did anything. Now, Weinstein did take my advice. And Louis C.K. did take my advice, because I forgot to say, be alone in the room when you beat off. Like, don't do it in front of people.
That's your fault.
Think about guys' libidos and think about the guys who have the wound up libidos, and think about what it does to their career, the troubles they get into, the marriages that are ruined, the careers that are ruined. Like, when they just have that thing where they go, like, I'm obsessed, I like young chicks, and I'm going to carve out a huge chunk of my life pursuing that. You end up in jail. Hope you got that, Brian.
Yes, come back.
You end up in jail in financial ruin. Like, it ruins it ruins everything. And it's almost like, I don't know, guys who have a taste for heroin or something. It's like, it will. Well, I mean, look, we love Artie Lang. What if the sober, straight, I don't care for drugs version of Artie Lang is a rich comedian who everyone loves?
Yeah.
Who's in good health?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody handicaps themselves in this industry. I think you're an anomaly. I mean, you're like the least hornball celebrity that I've ever seen. I mean, we've done a lot of shows at clubs, and you've never once, I mean, you've, like, when we laugh, sometimes you'll put your hand on my leg, but just as like a, hey, you know, that was funny.
We're in this together.
It was funny. And then, like, after a show, sometimes in the green room for Alone, we'll hug.
Right. Yeah.
And moving your hips is something there was music on.
Right. That's you're swaying.
You're swaying to, Prince.
Yeah.
The Lolita Express is plane that would fly to the Virgin Islands.
Not the Virgin Islands.
People believe Clinton has been to the islands numerous times. But guys are horny. I mean, think of how much smoother Bill Clinton's life would have gone without the crazy horn dog part.
That's true.
And the horn dog, just like the drugs, it's an impulse control issue. It's not like, all right, I'll do heroin, but never on a weekday, only in my own home. Like, no, it just goes. It just goes.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about what that addiction is. Like, I'm going to have sex with an intern, I'll do it in the Oval Office. I mean, that means you've put all boundaries aside. This comes first. Yeah. Everything else is second.
Well, I heard about this. Are you talking about the island that guy would go to?
Yes.
Epstein?
Because Donald Trump met Melania on that island.
Really? Whoa!
I heard that firsthand from somebody who was on that island.
Well, wait a minute. I don't want to besmirch the name of the president, but I thought he's having sex with his daughter. Are you saying there's another woman?
He must get confused sometimes.
There's another woman in his life?
Yeah. But he was there, and he switched women with another guy, and I'll tell you the guy off the air. The other guy had Melania, and he said, I like her, and let's switch.
Doss, turn the mics off. Go ahead and tell us now.
They're cold.
Off the air?
Off the air.
How are you privy
you
to this information?
Because he was on my podcast before Trump was president, and he told me the story.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
What, he was with Melania?
He was with Melania on the island. They called it Fuck Island.
Mm-hmm. Ironic, it was the Virgin Island.
This is all allegedly, by the way.
Of course.
Sure, sure. So, look, let's put it to you that let's just work this out. Rich guys,
Fitzdog's archives right now.
Rich guys want what they want when they want it. So you go, you guys all fly Southwest. Mm-hmm. Go wait in line at the Burbank Airport. We fly privately. So it's like, you guys eat at the Sizzler. We have chefs flown in and they cook at our own home.
Right.
Like everything is like a next level kind of thing. And if you think about a dude, you go, all right, well, dudes like cars. Okay, so rich guy's going to get a Bugatti, and then poor guy's going to drive
a Prius.
Okay,
thank you.
All right, so given that in mind, thinking what's at the top of the pyramid for a dude? Sexuality. Mm. So, okay, now I'm a rich guy. All right, well, let's take this same version of travel and cuisine and home and homes and domiciles, mm-hmm. everything. Just do that, extrapolate that math to pussy.
Yeah, fly it in.
Which just have sex with the same woman I've been married to for 41 years who share the same birthday.
That's
or go to fuck island.
Right. Yeah.
Right, because it's a version of what a rich guy does with everything.
Yeah.
Everything, just in transportation. And so I believe, now, once in a while, you run in that rich guy who's just like, I fly commercial and I fly coach and I bring a newspaper with me. That's Warren Buffett. Yeah. But the lion's share of the guys go another direction, and they're going to go another direction with the erection.
Nice one.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's being horny is something that a man grapples with your whole life, because it's the coal in the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
It's what drives you. It's why I got into stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not kid ourselves. I was never here to make you happy, folks. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I was here to have sex with one of you.
Oh, wow.
With the weak calf in the herd. I was eyeballing you from the stage. I was doing my dick jokes to show you that I had prowess. And then after the show, I would sell you a DVD and...
with your dick through it.
With my dick through it. And that was it. That's what drove me. And that is how most people in entertainment get started.
Wow.
They're trying to get laid.
Yeah. Trying to think, I was so miserable doing construction that I was trying to get paid more than laid.
Yeah. Hmm.
I figured that, but also being laid would be a nice
one begets the other.
Nice
sure.
benefit of it. But I was miserable. Like most, trying to think of what former professions comedians are usually smart. And so they have jobs where it's like, I was at college and then I would go out at night and do whatever, or they were like bartending or waiters or something like that, but they had a little air conditioning and not, they weren't like, I was coal mining and then I did comedy at night.
Right.
So they didn't have like the misery index that I had. I had the misery index. Like, I wanted to do comedy because I was miserable, and again, the byproduct of getting laid is fine.
Yeah, it's no byproduct.
What do most comedians do? I'm trying to think of like sort of the number one, because it's an intellectual process. So a lot of them went to college and had like white collary kind of worlds. Greg Giraldo and guys like that were like working
went
a law
Harvard,
firm and stuff like that. And then they got, but see, he didn't have the, oh my God, I'm on this roof with these Mexicans in Van Nuys. It's so brutal. You know, I mean, he had a job. Trent, you started really early.
Yeah, I started in college.
So you didn't have...
I never had a job because...
You never had a job?
I started in Boston at a time. It was the late 80s, and it was like there were comedy clubs. There were probably 6 full-time clubs in Boston itself, like 7 nights a week. And then you had every suburb, Worcester, Springfield. They all had comedy clubs. Then you would drive up to Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut, all like less than 2 hours away. And so when I was in college, I was going out every night and making money. And by the time I graduated, I was making a living. And so it was me and Joe Rogan. He was we started this like the same week. And we would just get in a car together. And before we were making money, we would get in the car and we would drive to New Hampshire for 2 hours to do a 10-minute set for free to get stage time. And we would do another club where we'd stack the chairs at the end of the show and take the tickets.
This is – it's funny because I just had a conversation with Mike August about going – when you're in L.A., you can't really make a living in L.A. because you can't go hit all the neighboring towns and stuff. But if you're an East Coast guy, you can work out in the city you're in, New York or Boston or whatever, and then you're within striking distance of all these other venues.
And it was the comedy boom. It was like when comedy was exploding, and I just, it was like Outliers, where I was in the right place at the right time.
You rode the wave.
I rode the wave. I got my 10,000 hours in front of good crowds, like Irish and Italian, loud, drunk New Englanders yelling at you, and it gave you like an edge. It's why you got guys like, you know, Bill Burr and Patrice O'Neill and Louis C.K. and so many, Dane Cook, all these people came out of Boston around the same time. Dave Cross. And
It's sort of like what Seattle was to the grunge,
right?
You know, the Northwest, Pacific Northwest was to like sort of the, you know, had mm-hmm. there has to be the right elements in the stew to like create these these voices. Yeah, also Mike was saying that LA comedians are kind of soft and they don't, the audiences are a lot nicer and everyone's like a lot more woke. And he said, if you go to New York or Boston with that shit, you're not getting back on stage.
No, you gotta, you have to challenge the audience on the East Coast. You have to be, there's no assumption when you get on stage at a sports bar in Newton, Mass.
Right.
There's no assumption by the audience that you're the funniest one in the room.
Oh, right.
By default. Now, you have to go up and prove to them in the first 2 minutes that you're the alpha and that you're the one that they should all shut up and listen to, or they simply won't.
God, it's like general population in prison.
Very much. Yeah. What I do is I punch the biggest guy
in the
crowd.
You gotta find the biggest guy.
Right in the face.
Yeah,
you're a bitch.
Yeah.
And so you learn how to be aggressive, and then you go to New York, and it goes to another level where it's that kind of intensity, but in front of small crowds, and you're getting on at 2 a.m. because you're the new guy in town. And so I think it's a really good trajectory. It's like Boston, then New York, and then eventually you come out to L.A. to make your $7 million. And I, right now, I've been out here 20 years, and I currently have over $17,000.
Wow.
Going towards that $7 million.
Mazel tov.
That's like $725 a year.
Right.
For doing comedy.
That's right.
And your goal was to get paid.
I just want to get paid.
He's going to be at La Jolla this weekend at the Comedy Store. I went to the La Jolla Comedy Store once when I was starting out very early. So it must have been there for a while, but
I've never been there for like 40 years.
I've not been back. And you can also check out all the live dates at fitzdog.com. Are we in a new renaissance of stand-up? I want to know from a guy who's had an unbroken streak of stand-up for 30 years plus. And I always just say to people, you know, look at the heavyweight division. There were the great years in the early 70s, and then in the early 80s, it was kind of down, and then it picked up again with Tyson, and then it dropped down again, and now it's kind of up again with some big heavyweights. So you'd look at the heavyweight division, and if you could put it on a chart, a graph, you'd say, oh, yeah, Ollie Frazier and Foreman and blah, blah, blah. And then you see it starts to drop down and pops up again. Where do you have stand-up as someone who's been in it in an uninterrupted fashion for so many years?
It's changed in the sense that, like, comedy clubs, when they're in a boom, they just have comedy written on the building and people line up to come in and see it, especially if it's a club like the Denver Comedy Works or the San Francisco Punchline, where they just always curate good comics. And then people trust that club and they go there. But that's kind of gone away, especially because you've got chains have come out with 400 or 500 seat rooms with balconies, and they simply can't book headliners that are big enough draws to fill those rooms. So they give out a lot of free passes, and they so that's not going well. But what you have is like podcasters, guys like Ari Shaffir and Rogan and Joey Diaz and Tom Segura, and these guys are selling out small theaters,
right,
all based on podcasts. And then you've got internet people that have big Instagram accounts, and they draw big crowds. But you are responsible for almost everybody that shows up. Like when I do a show at a club, 90-something percent of the people are walking out and going, loved you on the Adam Carolla show, or I love your podcast, whatever. They're fans that heard about me and came in. There's not that many people that passively just show up at the club anymore.
Yeah, I've found that if you play a theater, everyone's there to see you. If you go to the Comedy Store on a Saturday night, they might just be there to see comedy.
Right.
That's sort of my experience. But where would you rank, if you were to say we had all those big years in the mid-80s to early 80s, everyone, every pizza joint and restaurant had an open mic on a Wednesday night. I mean, like, when I talked to Leno in 84, 85, when I was working across the street from his house up in the Hollywood Hills, and I knew who he was, and I don't think he wasn't being recognized on the street at that point, but I knew who he was, and I would just come over and I'd go, I want to do comedy. Where should I go to do comedy? And he recommended a place on Ventura Boulevard called the Deli Smoker, which is a deli. He didn't say go to the, you know, Comedy and Magic Club. He didn't say go to the Comedy Store. He told me to go to a deli because he'd heard they had an open mic at a deli. And that's where I went. I went to the Deli Smoker. So yeah. Are we still, we don't have that now, do we?
Yeah, no, there's still that. There's even more so because you've got... Yeah, you've got like a very cool scene. LA used to be really hard to get on stage, and then people just got proactive and they just started setting up nights. They just call them mics, which means like they get a microphone, you go to a laundromat. You can see shows in Los Feliz at a laundromat. People are having shows in their backyards and they just promote the whole thing. They call them pop-up shows.
Right.
And they'll have them anywhere, coffee shops. And so so it's great because you're seeing a lot of good talent start to come up out of LA that you didn't see before.
That's interesting.
But when I was in Boston,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Which is that we were talking the other day about the Airbnbs and Lyfts and Ubers. This is the comedy version, the pop-up show.
Right. And and when I started, you're right. The big thing in New England was if you had a Chinese restaurant, they always had like a banquet room in the back that they were, you know, maybe they were using it three nights a week.
Right.
So these producers would come up and they'd go, let's do comedy. And they would just put a comedy sign out front and they get a microphone and a spotlight. And all of a sudden, Tuesday nights in Nashua, New Hampshire was selling out. So I'm playing this gig in Worcester, the Aku Chinese restaurant in Worcester. And it's all, you know, Worcester's just a defunct post-industrial factory town. Everybody's out of work. They're all angry. And they come in and they drink booze out of these giant scorpion bowls.
Right.
Where it's supposed to have, like, it's supposed to be like for your whole table, like four of them. They would have one for each person at the table. And these guys, and I'm on stage one night, and I went across the street to Cheapy's Donuts, and I got a dozen donuts for the late show Saturday because that's the one that they really get out of control. And I thought, I'll give them treats.
Right.
So I'm up there, and a woman in the front row passes out. And so I take a chocolate donut, and I put it on her knee, and everybody laughs. And I go on with my act. The woman wakes up 10 minutes later, sees the donut. Somebody tells her I did it. She gets up on stage with a chocolate donut and hits me in the balls with the chocolate. I got chocolate all over my pants.
Wow.
And then she sits down and the crowd is now on her side and I'm standing like an asshole with chocolate on my dick. And so everybody keeps laughing and then some guy yells something at me and another guy defended me. Fucking fight breaks out. Two different tables of guys go at each other. I got the mic. I just start announcing it like it's an MMA fight. You know, he hit him with a left. Watch out. He's on top. They call the cops. This fight, you know, fights usually last, what, 30 seconds?
Right.
They call the cops. The cops arrive. The fight's still going on.
Wow.
It just rolled around the room. And then it finishes and I do my 45. I do my time.
Wow.
Fight's over.
Committed.
Yeah. The Aku.
I love it. It's so great to have those stories. You know, I grew up out here. My story of walking in the snow. You don't have comic stories like you don't have walking in the snow to school stories out here. It's like, oh man, it was 68 degrees and all I had was a windbreaker. And I still went, you know.
Pilot season and I was only going in for casting sessions.
I was taking Mindy Sterling's groundling class at the gay church over there in Highland and we had to go down to the basement once because they had services up top. Like, I don't have any
I was at the adult child of alcoholics meeting and they only got to qualify for 3 minutes.
Yeah, you don't have the war stories out here. Like, you don't have those crazy fighting factory town, whatever whatever stories. All right, what else we got, Gina Gray?
Well, speaking of dudes that love to fight, two American tourists fulfilling their bucket list item of going to Pamplona, Spain, were gored while taking part in the annual Running of the Bulls Festival. Here's just some bull footage, no one specifically being gored. One of the men, he's 46 years old from San Francisco, he's fighting for his life right now after being gored in the neck. Yeah. He's listed in grave condition.
Grave.
A 23-year-old from Kentucky is recovering in the hospital after he took a bullhorn to the thigh. The men were two of six thrill seekers who were injured on the second day of the nine-day festival. Despite the obvious danger, a million tourists come to take part in this every year. So, you know, the odds are fairly low. You're going to be gored to death. Each year, between 50 and 100 people are injured.
I've not been to that Pamplona, Spain.
Yeah.
But my take is, I would like to live in that town.
Why?
I'd like to live in that town because if my kid showed up to school in the eighth grade and then got sent home because he had a pocket knife, I could always go, really?
You guys, you know where we live?
You guys have a tradition where you take full-grown bulls and you run them right down Main Street and they kill people. So you tell me I need to put out my cigarette because I'm standing too close to the school opening the
Good
door
point.
Or like, whatever. You get pulled over for, like, sir, you're doing 63 in a 55. Do you know how dangerous that is? Really?
As dangerous?
More dangerous? More dangerous or less dangerous than fucking bulls running down the middle of the street goring people. Yeah. We had a scale.
Right. Yeah.
And there's nothing you could say to me. There's no, like, lawn darts outlawed. Really?
Yeah.
Really? You're saying we can't have a diving board at the Y because why? Because what? Oh, too dangerous.
Oh,
pray tell. That's interesting. Yeah. Because we have a festival. I'd like to live in that town because I don't think you can make anything stick to me.
Did my son bring a furious bull into the classroom? No?
No, he did not ride a Brahma bull into Mrs. Thurston's fifth grade class. So you're saying he brought a bottle opener. Interesting. So that, to me, is more... I'd like to either live in that town or the fire festival town, like the ones in Mexico where they just throw fireballs at each other out the street.
Yeah.
Because I figure smoke anywhere, backyard, fireworks, wherever, whenever.
Right.
There is no. And again, you just go, oh, well, you don't want me to light a Piccolo Pete in the mayor's office. Interesting.
That's against the law.
Because you know what's coming up?
Right around the corner.
As a matter of fact, I got to get some kerosene and soak rags in it. Do you know where I can get some kerosene? Because we got a festival. It's coming up.
Yeah. Good point.
Double standard.
So you get to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can smoke wherever you want. You can do whatever you want to your kids.
Yeah.
You can walk around with weapons.
What jury would convict you?
Yeah.
They couldn't. You could drink anywhere. You could drive however you wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I believe the bulls get theirs at the end. I think they're all used for bullfighting afterwards.
Mm.
When it comes to the running of the bulls, how does one win? Like, is there a finish line? Most people seem like just kind of going to the side.
You say you did it. Uh-huh. It's a sort of I climbed Mount Everest, and then I think you have to have a little interaction. Like if you were like at the front and there was 300 souls behind you, and you never got closer than 200 feet to a bull or whatever, then I think the idea is to kind of let them pass you.
It seems like the goal of most of the people in the clip we saw was just to get to the edge. You know what I mean?
And a lot of them kind of reach out and try to touch
them. But if you spill out first, then you didn't get close to the bulls. If they're past you, there's a great piece of footage that we showed on the Man Show. Have you guys ever seen? So they all end up into this pen.
Right.
Now, sometimes the bulls jump the wall of the pen and get after people.
Yeah.
There's crazy about that. But there's a great... There's a great piece of footage of a bullhorn hooking a guy's undershorts.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
And, like, throwing him around, and at a certain point, just grabbing his underpants and doing a crazy wedgie. Since the beginning in 1924, 15 people have been gored to death.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Ooh, I'd also like to move to the Isle of Man, where they have the Isle of Man motocross TT and smoke and drink and do whatever I wanted. Because that's good if you like to drive drunk or erratically. Like, oh, interesting. Because three guys die every year on the same stretch of highway on a motorcycle. You guys have a parade.
You celebrate.
Yeah.
This is dangerous?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's footage of a bull grabbing a guy's underpants and, like, just completely ragdolling him. But it's just so crazy. And then strips him naked in the middle of the ring. It's crazy.
I'd like to see that.
Did he fuck him?
No.
No, he did. He did everything but. He did everything but. And it's crazy footage. I just remember it from the Man Show. Like, remember when, well, footage on the internet was weird? Like it was a novelty.
Man Show was a precursor to this before he could see all that stuff.
Right. All right. Sorry. What else?
Well, if you want to experience it, Bob Bryan, just go to the Walmart in Rancho Cucamonga on Black Friday and work as a greeter.
That's a good idea.
And just get to the side.
Yeah. If I'd like to experience the
rush of the bull.
And not in Pamplona.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, you mentioned Mount Everest, and they have a plumbing problem. Mm. Big plumbing problem. Mm. The current biggest threat to climbers, apparently, according to Fox News, on the world's tallest peak is a staggering amount of human excrement being left on the slopes. It's estimated that the number is around 17,000 pounds for this season alone. It's impossible to exactly know how much is spread across Everest because it's only visible, obviously, when the snow melts. But at Camp 2, at one of the base camps, which is two levels higher than the base camp, Sherpas who work on the government's cleanup drive around the spring believe that it's 17.6 thousand pounds. Apparently, melting conditions at Camp 2 create an odor that is so sickening. People literally get sick. The water's contaminated, causes the Sherpas and those who live at the camp, because they have to drink the melted snow, stay away till they clean that up.
I'd like to outlaw Sherpas. Like, my thing is if you can't make it up the mountain on your own, because this whole thing where, like, oh, they pack a camping stove and a Barca lounger, and then at a certain point, I'm just going to be on the shoulders of a Sherpa. They're just carrying me to the top of the mountain. Like, that ain't you climbing Mount Everest, bucko.
There's also a movement to ban oxygen tanks. It's like, if you can't just climb it, then don't bother.
Well, let's get it back, pardon the pun, to the rarefied air when it meant somebody. Because now you're like, it meant something. Mm-hmm. Like, you're now at a cocktail party with 14 people, and you go, I climb Mount Everest, since a middle-aged chick on the other side goes, oh, I climbed it too. I didn't see you there.
My kid and I.
Who dragged you up the mountain?
Right. And let's get handicapped people out of the marathons.
Yes.
You know, what is that? If you're handicapped, just fucking relax.
I got a hot take on this one. Here's my take on the marathons. Max Apata, you tell me, can you find that footage? It's weird.
Still looking, yeah.
Should be. That's like made for the internet.
Yeah.
What are you typing in?
We typed everything from bull running, the man show, wedgie.
Well, I don't know that you need the man show part. I think it's just going to be there.
This might be it.
Yeah, we're maybe looking at it. Grabs a guy, throws him, rips him up. On the ground, he's literally like raping him on the ground, and now he picks him up by his underpants, and he's ragdolling him again. And at a certain point, he's ripped
off
the pants. Oh. The guy's completely naked.
Porky Pigging it.
Wow.
That's Winnie the Pooh.
And doesn't look like he has a scratch, and his underpants are on the bull's horns. All right.
That was awesome.
He is a hero.
I did not exaggerate one iota on that. Okay,
told it correctly.
Hot take for Fitzdog. As far as I can tell, the power rankings on the marathon is the Kenyans come in about, the Kenyan men come in about 2 hours and 6-7 minutes. The Kenyan women come in at like 2:20, 2:23. The whiteys, off the pace a little bit. But the people who really win the marathon are the guys in the wheelchairs, the tripod ones that got the wheel in front. They're all graphite and everything. And they're made by Specialized and everything's aluminum and everything. Those guys do it in like an hour 13, hour 17. So they essentially do it in about half the time that the marathoners do it, because they're on wheels and they're averaging 30 miles an hour. And what I've said is, let those guys participate, but let them do it in standard wheelchairs. Like, not the super
hospital
highly...
wheelchairs.
Yeah, hospital.
St. John's Hospital
after
wheelchair.
After your wife gave birth, the one they insisted she sit on before they push her out to the thing, she gets up and walks to the parking structure. Yeah. That wheelchair. Let's see what you do in that wheelchair.
I could see that. Or a supermarket shopping cart, and a stick.
Well, that's not right.
Rowing.
What do the wheelchair guys do? I think it's literally, they have shaved an hour off of that. I mean, they are averaging 30 miles an hour for that 26 miles, and they're doing, the stuff is you know, it's defense contractor grade aeronautical, you know, made by specialized whatever stuff.
They've had it too good for too long. Finally, someone's calling them out.
Yeah, and then they finish, and they're the first ones out because they got the good parking spot.
Right. Oh, I didn't
think that.
Oh, they're right. Yeah. They should do standard wheelchairs and the toboggan in the four-man bobsled or whatever. That should just be a standard something you could get from the back of like a comic book or something when you were a kid. Like they shouldn't.
It should be Rosebud.
Yeah, countries shouldn't be winning because they have better wind tunnels and better materials. All right, let me hit JB Weld for big or small repair projects. You need JB Weld, man. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesive as our sponsor. We use it here. We use it at home. I use it in the garage. We use it in the studio. They just dropped off a nice cache of JB Weld epoxies and everything else for me. You get jbweld.com, or you can also get it at Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, and all that good stuff. JB Weld. Marathoners, I get it that the men are 2 hours and 3 minutes. I want in a wheelchair, guys. 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Ooh.
They're kicking ass in those things.
Yeah.
Aerodynamic.
Yes.
Well, speaking of countries winning, the United States women national soccer team. Yes.
Hold on. Look. They do, in drag racing, I've told you guys, they have bracket racing. Right. Bracket racing is, we do the quarter mile. Fitzdog's Prius does the quarter mile in 16 seconds, 17 seconds. My Jag does it in 11 seconds. So, he starts 6 seconds before me. And then I go, and then we cross the finish line at the same time, theoretically, because you're running a 17-second car, and I'm running an 11-second car, and we give you a 6-second head start. If these guys are doing it in an hour and 20 minutes, and the winners are doing it in an hour and 5, then put them back an hour and
stagger it.
Five minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it is. Let them go after the marathoners get to the halfway point, and then let the wheelchair guys see if they can catch them.
Yeah.
Then we'll see
Do this, stagger it the other way. Put the wheelchair guys about maybe a mile from the finish line. No wheelchairs.
Oh, now you're talking.
Who
Kenyan guys
that?
Rounded the corner. These guys are dragging themselves on their elbows, reaching, rolling on the ground like they're on fire.
And grabbing each other, climbing over each other.
You're right. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That's the way to do
it. Their legs are chafed and bleeding, but they have no idea.
That's right. Kenyans are running over them to get to the... That's good.
Who wouldn't watch that?
That's good.
I woke up at 8 a.m. to watch a soccer game. I'd watch this.
I would watch that. They're not handing them the Gatorade. They're just dumping it on them as they crawl by.
Well, you know, they don't have as much to pull, you know, with their arms.
Right.
It's lighter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lighter body, generally.
I agree. Now, unfortunately, we're going to have to figure out how far to start them back.
Yeah.
We don't know that it's a mile. It could be half a mile, it could be a mile and a half. Like we don't know how long these guys can drag themselves.
It's going to take a few years until we really nail down the stagger.
Right.
We don't want them winning.
No. Well, I'll tell you what.
I would have
two categories. I would have the drag category, which is you start a mile out, 25th mile, and you drag yourself across the thing. And then the others, I'd bracket back an hour and 10 minutes.
Right.
And hopefully, as the Kenyans were turning the corner, these guys were coming. We're all converging. One guy's going 40 miles an hour. The other guy's dragging himself at, you know, 10 feet a day.
Yeah.
And the other Kenyans got...
The Kenyans are tired. They're getting gassed.
It's like it's a mad, mad, mad world at the very end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. They're all heading for the giant palm trees.
And then at some point, there's going to be a Dick Fosbury of this group who figures out that it makes more sense to like go backwards, like scoot your trunk. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, and he's going to escape all the chafing and all the blame.
The flop. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or Handstand Harry.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to win it 1 year.
So the U.S. women's team beat the Netherlands 2-0 Sunday morning to defend its title, take its fourth FIFA Women's World Cup, which was played in France. Here's some footage of the reactions all over Kansas City, New York City, L.A., lots of places. Shortly after the victory, New York City announced the team would be celebrated in a parade Wednesday. President Trump, who had made it pretty clear his anger at Rapinoe, her six-month-old preemptive rejection of the White House visit, he did end up congratulating them on their big win. And now they got four in place.
Yeah. Boy, do I hate soccer.
I know.
I really realize, like, I hate soccer. And now the women are the much more dominant team in soccer, which we don't have so much in, I'm trying to think. Because you can't say, it's not like the women's team would beat the men's team, but they're much more dominant. But I'm like, eh. Not into soccer. And again, so my only achievement as a dad is teaching my son to hate soccer.
I hate it. I imagine it's through brand sponsorship and obviously ticket sales and stuff, but they shed some light on apparently the guys, if they win their the average payout for each of them is like $1.1 million, and for the women it's about $300,000. And obviously that's typical in sports, but I'm wondering with four wins in a row if that collective number is going to go up for them.
I'd like to see it go down. I'm with you.
you feel
women don't need as much money. They don't eat as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're smaller.
They're
not getting those big blowouts. They have short hair.
Yeah, the women's soccer team. Yeah, they spend no time on their hair.
That's right.
Can we do this? Can we move the free kick to the goal back 10 feet? It's a little easy. I see the chicks, like, you got to commit before the ball comes off the person's foot. Like,
you got to guess.
If you want to block this chick's goal, and these chicks got a lot of leg now. It's probably a lot more leg than they had 15, 25, 30 years ago. I don't like a thing where this is not a coin toss. This is a low percentage that you're going to stop this ball because you're going one direction before it comes off her foot. Also, they get to, I was watching sort of highlights. Like, so the ball.
Does Sonny know?
The ball was. The ball, he's like, Dad, what are you doing? I'm watching the UFC. Don't come in.
How could you?
Yeah.
I learned it from you.
So I watch it. I don't know all the rules, but evidently one chick's foot went up a little too high. Okay. And I guess you're not supposed to kick maybe over the height of your waist or something. But her foot went up a little high.
Well, she made contact with the body. And had she kicked the ball, the contact would have been okay, apparently.
It would be.
She didn't make a play on the ball. She kicked the girl in the chest.
Well, she was trying to make a play
on
the ball.
She was, but she didn't. Tell back the defensive back who's trying to make a play on the ball, but it interferes with the receiver.
Listen, I saw the right moves. I understand how football works. I know Cruz got job. But what I'm saying is I agree, but I'm not sure what the rule is.
Also, they're inside the penalty box, obviously.
So she was like trying to kick the ball, and the ball was up at like shoulder height. And I guess she missed the ball or came close to the ball, but she hit the chick in the arm in the attempt to kick the ball. I didn't know that you're allowed to kick that high, because you think a lot of people get hit in the face.
It's funny. I remember the rules when I played AYSL soccer when I was 8. You couldn't kick the ball that high. That was called dangerous play. They'd penalize you for that. But obviously, in professional levels or international levels, that's totally allowed, I guess.
I don't.
Oh, Dylan knows. Sorry.
I didn't want to do this.
What happened?
I didn't want to do this.
So she brought her foot up. What was the rule? What happened?
It's a high boot. It's kind of up to the ref, but if it's above the waist, you know, chest area.
You're not supposed to be getting up that high. You're
supposed to go in with
head
or...
Right. So she's trying to do something, but that means free kick and almost automatic goal. Like, it seemed like way too much punishment for what was going on. It's not like the other chick was going to score. I don't think she was necessarily going to score.
It's like having interference in the end zone. Ball goes on the 1 yard line. That, a lot of people don't like that, but that's the rule.
But
was there any guarantee he was going to catch it? No.
No.
But now the ball's
this is. I agree, and I don't like that rule either. I think you have to make a decision of how much they interfered or what it is, and they did. They looked at the tape, but I'm just saying, free kick in a championship game. I don't know. Do you have the play? We can look at the play. It didn't look like. Here's what it didn't look like. It didn't look that egregious from the chick from the Netherlands or Sweden or wherever she was from, and it also, it didn't look like the American was going to score per se. That's all I'm saying.
It wasn't egregious because, remember, it wasn't called, I don't know if you guys saw the game or not, it wasn't called on the field, it was the replay, essentially the international replay booth.
Right.
It was
like, so with that in mind, let's move back to free kick 10-foot, because I don't think the goalie should be guessing.
The game.
Well, for the wussies who want to make it more exciting, sorry, we can watch it. The ball gets kicked down, it goes in the air, and she kicked her foot up. She kicked her foot up and hit her in the arm, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know if that means like free kick or she was going to score or whatever it is. But anyway, all right.
My son, who's a really good soccer, he was first team all county and captain of the club team and the varsity team.
Right.
They were both undefeated his last year at school. And so I went to see him play a game and he headed the ball in from right in front of the goal. The defender tried to kick the ball away. His foot was at my son's face. Kicked my son in the face full force.
Oh, God.
Shattered his nose.
See
his
what
nose
happens?
Just exploded.
See
and
what
they had
happens?
To, like, rebuild his nose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, I guess
it's good that he's got a little character on it now. He's got a little cocktail party story.
All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
We're doing comedy. We need masonry.
Gina Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Let's see. Podcast One would like to say thanks for listening, and they asked for a small favor. Take a few minutes and take their study, take their survey. It's a short survey, podcastone.com. Podcast1.study. Sorry, that is podcast1.study. And the first 125 people complete the survey get a $10 gift card to restaurants.com. So why not take a few minutes and help it out? And someone who randomly takes it's going to get a $100 Amazon gift card. So check that out.
And give us a good Yelp review.
Yes. And Fitz Dog, a La Jolla comedy store. Played the club many times. I love the people in the area, and I like to think of myself as almost a native Lajolan.
Yeah. Honorary local.
Lajolan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dear people. Fitz Dog, and you can go to FitzDog.com to find out any info about live shows and the podcast Fitz Dog Radio. New episodes available on Apple. And Luke Gossett Jr. Supervise, the name of his new show. And Watchmen as well on HBO, so you can check that out. Me, live shows everywhere. Go to AdamCarolla.com and check out my stand-up special, Not Taco Bell Material, available as we speak. And you can get my stand-up at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/AdamCarolla. And Laughs with Bald Brian coming
featuring up. Featuring Greg Fitzsimmons.
Fitz Dog going to be there. I'll be there and many others as well. Brad Williams. And that'll be November 2nd at the Avalon in Hollywood. So, until next time, a good sports coming up. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Fitz Dog and Luke Gossett Jr. and Gina Grad and Bald Brian saying, mahalo. I like young chicks, and I'm going to carve out a huge chunk of my life pursuing that.
Stick around. Today's episode of Good Sports with Dave Danishek and Adam Carolla is up next.
The Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla over there. Don't forget, you can check out the newest episode of Dave's of Thunder wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Ace, it's a special day in summertime because there's nothing to really focus on. Okay, the women's soccer, the World Cup, notwithstanding, that provides a little distraction, but you know what it's about. It's about baseball. It's baseball, baseball, and more baseball. I refer you to the NL Central. You'll be positively amused and bemused by the difference between first place and fourth place in that division. It proves your longstanding point that they're all pretty much the same. Before we talk All-Star Game, I did want to mention one rich man, poor man that emerged from my conversation with Steve Byrne, who you had in recently as well. And it is the idea of having a laminate at work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're poor, it's because you got to do the third shift and go unclog the toilets and mop up the floors. Or
you're so special that you have to have a pass that requires you to get through, you know, steel doors. I don't even know what. Maybe it even, you know, it's going to read your eyeball at some point. I don't know what, but you have a laminate with you when you're one of those guys.
I think it's good.
Don't patronize me. If you don't like it, don't like it.
What I'm trying to figure out is the middle using the laminate swipe to get into the building or getting whatever, and I think the middle management guys have to swipe the key card too. You have to eliminate.
Cut this from the show, Gary.
You have to eliminate the middle. I favorite tweeted one or two, Dylan. I'm looking at you from today or the other day.
Yeah, you had a good one yesterday too.
Mine was greatly affected by raising the minimum wage.
That makes sense.
Because no one in the middle cares about it going from $13 to $14.50.
Like, they wouldn't, right.
They don't care. But either paying it or you're receiving it, it impacts you in a big way.
That's right. That's I like that one a lot. So, Ace, like I say, All-Star Game, I don't know about you. When I was growing up, maybe it was the lack of channels to look at. But I remember in summertime, it was so great. It was so exotic, too. It's also probably diminished because of, like, ESPN and MLB Network and otherwise. You just didn't see half of those guys. You just never saw. And there also was an interleague play. So that was your one chance to see if you were in Pittsburgh, as I was. Oh, there's George Brett. That's what he looks like when he plays baseball in that powder blue getup, like tipping his hat to the crowd. And then you wait to see your guy from the Pirates. Oh, there he is in right field. The Cobra, Dave Parker. You know, civic pride.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the NBA and MLB have figured out something. Unconcerned with the price of gas, kind of, but I wasn't one of my, I don't know who tweeted me that one. All right, so here's the deal. Somebody has figured out that the events surrounding the game, the skill stuff, especially in the hockey All-Star game, I give two hoots about who wins the hockey All-Star game, but I love the skilled event stuff out there, and the home run derby and the slam dunk and the 3-point competition and, you know, and all that kind of stuff is they've made rock soup out of that. They've turned it into an all-star weekend. And I'm much more apt to enjoy the home run derby than I am to watch the physical game.
It's weird to me that football hasn't decided to do that because it's right there. Everybody swoons when they replay the QB competition from 1998. Why don't they do that? Like throw the moving targets, they load up a big bullseye thing on the back of a golf cart and they drive it across the field and John Elway would hit it right in the middle every time. Or not John Elway, he was inaccurate. Whoever. Steve Young would probably drill it.
It's also funny how inaccurate those guys were when they were trying to hit the wagon or hit the bullseye or whatever it is. I always watch that when that comes down. I liked it wasn't Nate Newton. It was the other Cowboys offensive lineman who would take 225 and knock off like 51 reps. With it, the biggest, strongest guy in the NFL was the interior.
Not Larry Allen.
It may have been Allen.
Maybe it was him then.
Was Larry Allen the guy who always said it wasn't Nate? Nate Newton's down 200 pounds now, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys. What's funny about offensive linemen is that when they retire, 6 months later, you see them. They either are unrecognizable because they've turned into a raisin and they've lost 120, or they've just let it go and now they're 500.
Fat man, skinny man. Interior lineman. Larry Allen was the guy.
Larry Allen won ESPN's Strongest Man Award during Pro Bowl weekend in 2006 by benching 43 reps with 225 pounds.
Sheesh.
I saw something somewhere else in like the preview here that said he ripped off 10 reps of incline bench press with 520.
My goodness.
Guy's strong.
It's weird, though. It's weird that when I'm thinking about the football, the QB thing, some of those guys, some of the quarterbacks in the NFL would like barely be able to throw it 50 yards. That was unacceptable. That must have been humiliating. Yeah. Like, I don't have, I'm going to hold on. I'm not going to do this one today. Like, why not? Don't you want to see what you can do there, Jay Fiedler? No. I'm gonna sit this one out.
I guess the injury thing is such a big deal that they don't get involved with that stuff. But the NFL has fallen off, and NBA and MLB is gone. I'm not interested in baseball, but I am interested in watching the Home Run Derby.
The one we got to bring back, Ace. Mm-hmm. You know what? There really is. I don't know if there's a feature-length documentary, but it would be a good 30 for 30. Let's talk about this off air. 30 for 30, for real, is that the college all-stars used to play the defending Super Bowl champions. And I'm not talking about in the 40s.
Right, right.
Do you remember? I don't remember them as a kid. They ended, I think, in 76 or 77. The Steelers, in a torrential downpour, played. And I remember Terry Bradshaw, because I've looked it up on YouTube, gets sacked by Maryland's Randy White, who then goes against him in a couple Cowboys. Super Bowls after that.
Right.
Sacks Terry Bradshaw. How was that a game? How crazy is that? And by the way, when I denounce pro football from the 40s, my first example is always, how good was it if the college all-stars could beat the NFL champ? That's a pretty big indictment of your sport.
I blame Sherwood Schwartz. Sherwood Schwartz invented the Brady Bunch.
Right.
And he was also the creator of Gilligan's Island. And at a certain point, he thought it'd be a good idea for the Harlem Globetrotters to play robots in basketball on Gilligan's Island.
Right.
And I think it was a sobering moment for the commissioner of the of the NFL, who went, you're right, this has turned into a charade.
And he gave it the fancy pronunciation.
That's right.
He went charade. Yeah. I like that. The other thing about the All-Star game that intrigues me or is weird to me is baseball – you know, pretty much at least half our lives was everybody understood. Yeah, it's America's pastime. It got away for a long time, even though you knew the NFL was more popular than baseball. It got away with that claim of like, but it's still America's pastime.
Yeah.
And, you know, James Earl Jones and whoever, waxing prosaic about its greatness. But isn't it weird in 2019? Literally Mike Trout, the best, the guy's going to go down as the greatest baseball player of all time if he keeps this up for any stretch. No, he could walk down the streets of Los Angeles, and people wouldn't know that guy.
Oh. Well,
right? Isn't that weird?
Listen, first up, Los Angeles, you can't walk. Everyone else who's walking is not from Los Angeles. You know, they don't speak English.
Oh, all right. Like, well, right. L.A., that's maybe a bad example.
It's true. He could probably go somewhere in Anaheim and go. Mike Trout can go enjoy a movie without being bothered if he chooses not to wear an Angels ball
cap.
See
that guy over there? He's in pretty good shape. You know, that's about what you might think.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that.
I don't know, but it strikes me that calling baseball a pastime versus a sport is like calling the Korean War a conflict. I feel like it's a downgrade.
Remember when George Carlin did the great bit of the difference between football and baseball? Yeah, it hurt itself with those you get. And by the way, the run thing, it's not a point.
He also did a whole bit on football and the military.
Oh, really? The terminology, right. I think it's one and
Blitz
the same.
It's probably the same. All right, let me hit Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity breakdown. Rob your engine of maximum performance. Friction results in a loss of performance up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to get stronger under pressure and deliver maximum levels of performance for your car. Three times, fool. Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. It is Castrol Edge.
Very nice, Ace. We'll be back on Wednesday with a fresh Good Sports for you. Until tomorrow, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek out. Good Sports.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Come out to the Tenney Booze and Book Club this Thursday, 7 p.m. at Tenney Restaurant in Los Angeles. I'll be reading a chapter from the book Ghost with guest Mike McGowan, FBI undercover agent. Plus, Corolla Drinks signature Mangria cocktails at 10 e Thursday night. Tickets and info on the live podcast, Mangria events, books, movies, and more. Go to AdamCarolla.com and stay tuned for AP News.